Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Rob Reiner has been a household name since the 1970s when he played Meathead in the TV sitcom All in the Family. He directed This Is Spinal Tap, Stand By Me, The Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally, and more. Outside of the limelight, he has struggled with his son Nick's addiction. Nick, now 22 and off of drugs, co-wrote a film about that time. Rob Reiner has directed it. It's called Being Charlie. This hour on Point, Rob and Nick Reiner on making a film that echoes their own family's struggles with addiction. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you, your family, had to deal with addiction? How bad did it get? What has helped? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Rob Reiner, actor, writer, director, producer, political activist. First became known for his role as Michael Stivic, or Meathead, in All in the Family. Credits, yes, including This is Spinal Tap, Stand By Me, The Princess Bride, A Few Good Men, When Harry Met Sally. Big names in film. Rob Reiner, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from New York is Rob's son, Nick Reiner, who cycled through 17 rehab stays for his drug addiction. Rob was director, Nick a co-writer of the new film Being Charlie, about families struggle with addiction. The film is out tomorrow. You can link to a trailer at our website, onpointradio.org. Nick Reiner in New York, thank you very much for being with us, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
There's a lot we want to learn from both of you. Nick, when did you first start getting into drugs? I know that that background and the time in and out of rehab informed your whole writing or co-writing of this movie, the script for Being Charlie. When did it begin, Nick, and how?
Well, it actually began about a week before my 15th birthday, and preceding that, I had done stuff. I'd gotten into drugs and stuff like that. I, at an early age, was drug tested because I was caught smoking marijuana, and once that happened, I was, because that stays in your system for the longest. After that, I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore, so what else can I experiment with that won't show up and I'll get out of it? Test faster. And so I started to dip into other things, and that, you know, it just started going pretty quickly.
Are you surprised, having been through that? I want to learn more about that, but you know what an epidemic of opioid abuse and addiction we have in this country right now. Even Prince, in his recent death, the news, New York Times today, that he was looking for help with opioid problems before his tragic death there. Are you surprised at how widespread this is, Nick?
No, I'm not, because if I'm not mistaken, Prince took prescription pills, which I know, being in a position like that, it is much easier to justify taking a pill or, you know, using a pill because you're like, oh, this is made by, you know, a company. This is an exact amount. I'm not buying this off the street. And so, you know, you don't think you have a problem because, you know, you use that old excuse, it was prescribed to me.
Prescribed. Everybody knows, I guess, when they start abusing it, but the way in is made easier because, like you say, there's a label right on the bottle, and it looks straight up. Rob Reiner, did you ever imagine back in the day when you were making all the films that made your name that one day you would have a son who would be addicted to heroin?
No, he wasn't addicted to heroin. I mean, that I don't know where that came from. I mean, he did experiment with a lot of different drugs, and it's reflected in the film, but I wouldn't say he was ever addicted to
17
heroin.
Times in rehab?
Yeah, he was in and out of rehab. There's no question about it. He was in and out many, many times, but it wasn't for heroin. Heroin only showed up a little bit and at the end, but not in any kind of significant way.
Nick, what was the real core of your drug problem in terms of what you were taking, and do you think you were addicted?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, yeah, I did dip into all categories of drugs, but I haven't done that in, I don't know, 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And I was very much into that stuff through the ages of 15 to 19. And with that, I was also a very angry kid. I also had some other problems. And like most kids have problems.
Sure.
They either deal with it with like isolation or video games or whatever it is. But mine was sort of drugs. And I think I went to that because I thought, oh, I'm from this family where I'm already, you know, my identity is already stamped. I'll never live up to it.
My dad's
so
Rob
Reiner. Why don't I carve out my own rebellious identity for myself?
Rob, how did it dawn on the family that Nick was in trouble and that you needed to really get in there hands-on?
Well, he was with a friend one night, and the friend of his overdosed and had to go to the hospital. And it was at that point that we were concerned, you know, that Nick was also, you know, using the way this young guy was. And I, to be completely honest with you, I think his mother and I overreacted at that point because we got scared. We saw this other kid overdosing and possibly dying. And I certainly had had experience with a very close friend of mine back in the 60s die of an overdose. So it freaked us out to the point where we thought we got to do something. I mean, as a parent, your first charge is to keep your children safe.
Yes.
And here we were thinking, you know, is it possible that Nick could be putting himself in jeopardy for his own life? And so we rushed very quickly to find if there was help and what we could do. And we rushed him into a program. And I'm not saying those programs, they might maybe work for some people. AA is very good for a lot of people. A lot of people doesn't work for. But I think for his mother and I, we kind of overreacted. And then it was like the cycle of one program after the next. And we were given the advice, at least I was, that you had to have tough love. You had to be, you know, put your foot down, which is not really my nature. I'm not like a disciplinarian or anything like that. And I went against my own instinct, which is I believe I know my son and I know my children better than experts might know them. But I basically did, you know, whatever they told me to do. And Nick being the kind of, like he says, rebellious and, you know, tough-minded kid, he just got angrier and angrier, and he just rebelled more and more. So every time he'd come out of a rehab program, he'd just say, okay, well, if this is what you think about me, I'm going to go do this. And he would go do something else, and then we just started the process all over again.
Here's a little bit from Being Charlie. Rob Reiner has directed it. Nick Reiner, his son, has co-written it. The father here is running for governor of the state of New York, former actor, is the story, played by Cary Elwes, who, of course, was big in Princess Bride years ago. Here he is talking to his son, Charlie, about how he's handled Charlie's addiction in the film from Being Charlie.
Every expert with a desk and a diploma told me I had to be tough on you. But every time we sent you away to another one of those programs, I saw you slipping further away from us. And all I could tell myself was, I'd rather have you alive and hating me than dead on the streets.
Nick Reiner in New York, Being Charlie, starts with the character kind of inspired by or based on or anyway informed by your experience walking away from a rehab center. What did you learn from all those rehab sessions about what works and what doesn't, at least for you, Nick?
I learned that, you know, as much as you like to help someone who is going through a problem with either drugs or alcohol, it really has to come from them. It's a decision from within. And I believe what doesn't work is a lot of these programs, you know, they advertise themselves as places that are going to help you and stuff like that. But the first program I ever went to, they took me into a room and they took my parents into a separate room and they sold us two different stories. And what they told me was, you know, what they told me and then what they told my parents was basically, this is what he's going to say. They're all lies. Everything he says is a manipulation. Mm. And so watch out for it. And when I would tell them, hey, look, I'm having a problem with this or this part of the program, they'd be like, you know, brick walled. And I would be like, well, why isn't this getting through? You know, they were like either prepped or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know what goes on at these places, but it's very a one size fits all type of deal.
Rob Reiner, Nick, this is not only a problem that you portray in the film, being Charlie, not only a problem your family has known, but lots of families in this country have known it, know it right now, and a lot of them are calling in to talk with the two of you about it. I want to go to one. Lee in Salem, Alabama. Lee, you're on the air with Rob Reiner, Nick Reiner. Hi, Lee.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
What's your story?
My son was on crack and heroin at the age of 11. And he was living with his dad, and I blamed his dad for a very, very long time until I made the realization, like Nick just said, it has to come from within. When he moved in with me, crack was not available. So he changed his drug of choice to crystal meth. And he was on crystal meth until he was probably in his at least late teens, early 20s.
How does a kid 11 years old get into an environment where there's crack and crystal meth handy?
Well, because there was a neighbor that was the same age as his dad and I,
yeah,
who offered him a job, helping as a DJ.
Yeah.
And someone the age of his parents got him involved in it.
Is he clean now, Lee? Has he finally found his way out? How?
Well, it took a lot of years. He was in his late 20s, very early 30s. I had asked him one time, I said, why do you continue to do drugs? Because it costs you everything. You get arrested, you lose your job, you lose your vehicle, you
yeah.
lose your housing, you lose everything. And
yeah.
he said, because I like the way it makes me feel. So I told him that I prayed for the day that that wasn't the case. So in his late 20s, and when he finally got clean, I asked him, what made you stop? And he said it just wasn't worth it anymore.
Lee, I so appreciate your call from Alabama. Rob Reiner and Nick Reiner, you can hear the echoes of your story. These opioid stories, addiction stories, are all over this country now. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour with film great Rob Reiner and his son Nick about addiction and their new film Being Charlie, story of addiction, a father and a son that cuts very close to home to their own one-time family story. You can join us this hour. Can you sympathize with the story of Rob and Nick Reiner? Have you been there? And what, if anything, worked for you, your family, your addict in terms of intervention, treatment, tough love, soft touch, addiction counselors? What do you hear in the story of Rob Reiner and his son Nick, the story told now in the motion picture Being Charlie? Rob Reiner, of course, with a big, big career, a lot of great humor at the beginning. 1987, The Princess Bride, Inigo Montoya, played by Mandy Patinkin, confronts the man who killed his father.
Hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
We laughed and laughed for a long time. 1989, when Harry meets Sally, Billy Crystal, and Meg Ryan driving together from Chicago to New York. Rob Reiner directed.
Men and women can't be friends because the sex part always gets in the way.
That's not true. I have a number of men friends and there is no sex involved.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
You only think you do.
You're saying I'm having sex with these men without my knowledge?
No, what I'm saying is they all want to have sex with you.
Yeah, there we go. When Harry met Sally, but different story. Being Charlie, Charlie's played by Nick Robinson, returns to rehab here in a support group. A counselor played by Ricardo Chaviro tells him that sobriety is priceless. Here's Charlie's response.
What's the entrance fee to this place nowadays? $20K? You're no better than the guy on the corner, okay? But you're not slinging dope. You're slinging false hope and serenity. And you got everybody hooked with doctors, parents, teachers, lawyers, even the judges. And we're paying out the nose for it.
You think I do this for the money?
No, no. I think you do this for the courtside seats to human suffering.
Being Charlie is out tomorrow. Rob Reiner directed, Nick Reiner co-wrote. Rob, can you just give us the outline of the story of Being Charlie? What's this? It's not exactly the story of you and Nick. It's different. What is it?
Well, yeah, no, it's not. We've taken from our experience, mm-hmm. but it really isn't us.
Right.
It's a story of a young guy whose father is running. He was a former movie star, was mm-hmm. in a series of pirate movies played by Cary Elwes, and he was a big hit. And now he's running for governor of California. And he's more concerned about how Charlie getting out of rehab or, you know, being on the streets and how that might affect his political career and his campaign. And then Charlie is struggling like crazy to figure out who he is, what, you know, what he's about. He's got a good friend that lives in Los Angeles. They get involved in a number of things. He meets a girl, Charlie does, in one of the rehab centers and becomes involved with her, even though she's unstable, and how it affects him. And it's really about what Charlie has to go through and how you know, how he struggles with his own problems and how it affects his mother and father.
Nick, what did you most want to convey when you were writing on Being Charlie?
That everybody who struggles with drugs or alcohol and enters a program to help themselves, to not take the word of the program right off the bat and to question everything and question, does this work for me? And if it isn't working for me, is it my fault or is it their fault? And it's okay to think it's their fault because, you know, I went to several programs that didn't work for me and I was very hard on myself because I was, you know, thinking it was my fault.
Yeah. But if you don't take if you don't put your trust in the rehab center, then you're putting your trust in yourself to judge it. But at that point, you're the drug abuser, maybe even the full-on addict. I mean, how do you trust yourself in that situation, Nick?
Well, that's what they tell you, is that, you know, you've got an addict brain and, you know, you really you want to run your own show and stuff like that.
Yep.
But my belief is that if you really want to be empowered in life and you don't want to live that way anymore and you look at yourself and you're like, I'm unhappy. Like, mm-hmm. I'm doing drugs. Yes, it's a quick fix, but ultimately I want something in life that's going to last. Mm-hmm. And like for me, it was writing. And it was no program, it was no AA meeting, it was writing. And everybody can find their passion and something that can replace drugs, that's a drug forever. And it doesn't last 4 to 6 hours,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a permanent thing.
Rob Reiner, you and the family were watching this, and this is your son. I mean, you know, I can only imagine what that felt like. What was the evolution of your thinking about the wisest way to try and get in there and help to address this, Rob?
Well, it was very scary. I mean, because, as I said, the main charge of a parent is to keep your child safe.
Yeah.
And so you see your kid, you know, running out into the street, you're going to yank him out of there before he gets hit by the truck. I mean, it's very, very scary. So, you know, you try to understand it as best you can. And like I say, initially, I would just go along with what every program said. I'd listen to, you know, as we said, anybody with a desk and a diploma, I would listen to. But then you get to a certain point where I go back to my own gut instincts about it, which is the taking of alcohol or drugs or, you know, gambling, whatever it is not the disease itself. It's the medication. It's the self-medication mm-hmm. to mask the, you know, to basically make you feel better so that you don't have to deal with the underlying issues, which is the disease. And that for everybody is different. Everybody's got their own unhappiness, confusion, depression, anxiety, whatever the issues that you're dealing with. That's the thing that has to be attacked. And that's what needs to be dealt with so that you don't. So that you aren't self-medicating to make yourself feel better. That woman who called in before said, why did, you know, she asked her son, mm-hmm. why did he do it? Because it made him feel better.
Yeah.
Well, the question is, why didn't he feel good? What was going on that was making him not feel good? And that's what needs to be dealt with.
But, I mean, Lee was calling in from Alabama, you know, where the next-door neighbor had crystal meth going on. And at the dad's house, it sounded like there might be some problems. Crack nearby. I mean, Rob, you've had a very successful Hollywood career. You and Nick, you were not growing up in crystal meth territory, presumably.
I mean, but I don't think it has anything to do with having money or Hollywood or not Hollywood.
Yep.
It has to do with using something to make you feel better. And you can feel bad regardless of, you know, your situation. You want to chime in, Nick?
I mean, I've spent time on living in the streets before, and I've been around some pretty dark stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe it has anything to do with where you grew up. And anybody that has any amount of money knows that whatever you buy ain't going to make you happy. And it's, you know, it's just going to last a certain amount of time. And like he said, like that she asked her son, what is the deal? And he said, I am unhappy. He didn't say, oh, I just can't stop you. He actually had the awareness to say, I am unhappy. Yeah. And why is he unhappy? And I'm sure, you know, I don't want to speak for this woman, but I'm sure there's some reason.
In Being Charlie, one of the rehab facilities organizes a talent show, and Charlie, played by Nick Robinson, does a stand-up routine. Here from the new film, directed by Rob Reiner, co-written by Nick Reiner, from Being Charlie. A little bit of that.
I know what you're thinking. I do. You know, who is this kid with the silver spoon in his mouth, and why does he keep cooking heroin in it? Total waste of a good utensil.
Yeah, funny, until it's not. Ella, in Brattleboro, Vermont. Ella, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air with Rob Reiner and Nick Reiner.
Oh, hi, Tom. Hi, Reiners.
Hi.
So I don't honestly know if I can really be any more articulate than you guys have already been. I just think that addiction is a condition that affects people, this bone-deep certainty that life is unlivable, that you've been told this is the way. You know, you go to a detox and they tell you this is the way. This is what you have to do. You do this, you do this, you do this.
You mean the rehab formula, the detox formula.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And we hope. And that gets us through another day. But when you come to a point when you are certain that you've exhausted every option, that everything that everyone else has tried, that there's something about you that's not, it's not right. You're somehow not, life was not made for, you're not a life form that was made for this existence. It just, I mean, I don't know, hope is such a vibrant, I mean, essential part of life. And for me, I didn't get that back. I was absolutely, and I'm sure, Nick, and pretty much most addicts, it's a matter of luck. You make the deal, you walk out, and you put things in your body, you go to places by yourself and make very bad decisions because you genuinely are gambling with something that is not worth very much to yourself. And that's your life, you know? And I don't know,
How did you get out of it, Ella? Or have you found your way out?
God, this is, pardon me, I'm going to gush for a second.
Okay.
There are two things. One, I heard once in a program that, you know, you can stop. You know, you can go back to drugs whenever you want, or alcohol. It's not going anywhere. So why, you can just try it. If it wasn't that wonderful, everyone would go back to drinking or drugging. If there wasn't something to it, nobody would ever stay clean. So that was profound. And then the second thing was, I actually met someone who was living a sober life and was happy. And I'd never seen that up close before, truly. And it was, and now that's my partner, and he has, I don't even know. It's very, I don't know, just being next to him and watching, seeing the proof that there was something truly joyous about his experience that I'm standing right next to him. I wasn't seeing for a little while, and I can't thank him enough. He saved my life. So, anyways, I just wanted to thank you guys for talking about this, and this is a little out of character for me. And, but anyway, so thank you so much. The dialogue in the movie sounds incredibly, I'm going to use this word, it sounds hokey, authentic, and it's very very truthful. So thank you guys.
Ella, I really appreciate your call and your shout out to the Reiners here. Yeah, we got the Reiners here. Nick, what about in your case? You hear Ella thinks about it, about how she found her way out of it. What do you resonate with in her story there, Nick?
I really resonated with what she was talking about at the beginning of sort of that lack of hopelessness. You feel sort of like you're in The Walking Dead. You know, once you've been bit, you can never go back.
Yeah.
And it's like once you're an addict, you're always an addict. And for some people, maybe that's a comforting thought. But for others, it's more of a daunting thought.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like, well, I'm this forever. This is what defines me. And I just think, the you know, I don't have any answer for anybody. I only have the answer that worked for myself. And I just think a valuable thing is that we just start talking about this. And like my dad says a lot, the second A in the AA is probably the most problematic part, which is people feeling like they need to conceal this information.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many people are addicted to something and they don't feel like they want to own it and they want to, you know what I mean?
Right now, it's a lot of people. We're talking about the new movie Being Charlie with Rob Reiner and Nick Reiner. I mean, addiction has had a workout all over this country. Everybody's talking about it. Opioid abuse has just gone up like crazy. Even the biggest figures in this political season talking about it. Here was a little bit of Ted Cruz talking about his sister Miriam's lifelong struggle with drugs and alcohol. This was on CNN with Jake Tapper back in November. Here's Cruz recounting the time when he and his father went to a crack house to find his sister and try to convince her to seek treatment, if only for the sake of her then young son.
We pulled her out. We went to a Denny's and spent about 4 hours trying to talk to her, saying, Miriam, what are you doing? And she was just angry. She wouldn't change. And you can't, with an addict, you can't make them change if they're unwilling to get treatment, if they're unwilling to walk a different path.
Even Ted Cruz is right out there sitting in Denny's talking with his sister who's addicted. Gary in Oklahoma City, you're on with Nick Reiner. Rob Reiner, thanks for calling, Gary.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with a lot of what you guys are saying. I've been a drug addict for the last 12, 13 years, and I've only been sober since 2012. You know, I went in and out of rehabs, and, you know, it really doesn't matter how you're brought up, where you're from. You know, my dad, he was a canine cop, and
okay.
That's
all
actually
right.
What kind of got me started.
Why? How?
I went to a small town school, so everybody knew my dad was a cop. So when he took somebody's dad or brother to jail, I'd get beat up or whatever the next day at school. So I had to go out and be, you know, more crazy than everybody else. So
yeah.
I started using drugs and fighting a lot and went down the wrong road. And, you know, a few years ago, I got caught and, you know, I had to go to rehab a couple of times and neither time worked. I was really freaking out trying to figure out what I was going to do because, you know, my big thing was the opiates. So once you know that energy that you get from that, it's hard to replicate it, you know, just off natural energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up getting on Suboxone, and I haven't used anything since. I mean, it's kind of like a substitute.
Is Suboxone like a methadone thing, Gary? Is it one of those?
It kind of is. It's different. I think they call it an opiate antagonist, which means that it makes your brain think that it's on opiates, but it's really not. And it's got the naloxone in it, is what they give people who overdose on opiates. So therefore, if I was, say I'm taking the Suboxone and all of a sudden I want to go take some pain pills, I'll get sick or I wouldn't feel them because of the naloxone. So it kind of makes it where I can't take them no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. Gary, we're coming up on a break here. You sound like a really sharp guy, and I'm glad you found something to help you off of that. And if I may, Rob, let me just bring it to you. You've made films about all kinds of things, but you hear from all over the country just calling in right here. This is so big in people's lives.
Yeah, and what I'm hearing mostly, even the guy who's talking now is you know, he was feeling a lot of pain when he went to school. You know, the kids would get
physical,
mad.
Literal.
You know, literally, they'd beat him up or whatever. So if you're in a situation in your life that you're not happy, and you'll do whatever it takes to make yourself feel better. And so, you know, the fact that the drugs are so prevalent and so easy to get, you'll do whatever it takes to make yourself feel better if you're not happy. I mean, they did this experiment years ago about, you know, this the very famous with the rat in the cage.
Yep.
And the, you know, if it's in a little tiny cage, the rat will go to the, you know, it's got the water and then it's got the water laced with cocaine. It'll always go to the cocaine water. And everybody assumed, well, that's because the cocaine is addictive and that's what they would do. But then they put rats in a huge park area with male, female rats, and they had all the freedom in the world, and they had the cocaine water and the regular water, and the rats would go to the regular water. And the reason they did that is because they were happy. They felt good. Their life was good. They don't need something to make themselves feel better. If you feel you're in a cage, you're in some kind of emotional cage, which it sounds like this guy was in, because he was all of a sudden at school, it was like a horror place for him to be. Then you'll do what it takes to make yourself feel better in that cage. But if you have a good life, You don't want to take drugs to mess that up.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with film great Rob Reiner and his son Nick about addiction and their new film, Being Charlie, story of addiction, a father, a son that cuts very close to home to their own family story. Rob Reiner has directed the new film. Nick Reiner has co-written it. He had 17 stays in rehab facilities to address his own drug problems between age 15 and 19. He's out of that now and with us today. You can join us. Has your family had to go through this? How did you come out the other side, or have you? What was the hardest part? What did it do to the family? What worked in terms of rehab? This is a big deal in America now. Here's a little bit from Being Charlie. Charlie, played by Nick Robinson, has just given up on rehab. His father, David, played by Cary Elwes, running for governor, wants him to go back. His mother, played by Susan Misner, has second thoughts.
Charlie, I want you to be back home with us.
Honey, we just discussed this, remember? Can't let him manipulate you.
I'm not manipulating her. I'm asking her for her opinion. You should try it sometime.
Damn.
Careful, I'm one of your constituents now. You wouldn't want to lose the governor's race by one vote.
Okay, you know what? Here's how it's going to go. You can either head back to treatment or live on the streets. It's your choice.
That's an easy one.
No, Charlie.
Honey.
Things really fall apart. And just another little bit here. Charlie, again, played by Nick Robinson, asks Travis in the film Being Charlie, played by rapper Common, for advice.
What if you still think about it?
The cravings? That's all they are. As long as you don't act on them.
They ever go away?
Think of how hard it was for you scoring drugs and maintaining that lifestyle. Why should this be any easier?
From Being Charlie. Rob Reiner, was it hard for you to direct this, knowing that, you know, you had such tough family experience in the story that lay behind it?
You know, it was one of the most difficult and at the same time rewarding and most emotional and positive creative experience I've ever had. I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you go into a situation like this, you don't, you know, you're saying you don't expect it's going to be cathartic or, you know, that it's going to be therapeutic in any way. But it definitely forced me into understanding a lot more of what Nick was dealing with and what he was going through. And I think it forced him to see what I was going through and what his mother was going through. And I think it definitely brought us closer together. And for me, it was like the gift of all time. And I told him many times when we were making the film, I said, if nobody ever sees this film, you know, it was a big win for us. I mean, for the two of us. So hopefully it can help other people as well.
Nick, what about you? Did doing the film and writing the script here help you understand the other side of the equation, what your parents had gone through in those years when you were pretty deeply into drugs?
Oh, completely. Yeah, I definitely saw their side of it and didn't see that at the time. And I was thinking, oh, my God, this must have been so hard as a parent to have to go through this. And, you know, how many nights you'd stay awake thinking about your kid. But what really was like the bonding experience for me, and this goes back to finding a passion in your life, is that when I was able to not what was being said specifically in the film, but when I saw my dad like sort of in his element directing a film, I really got to see his true colors, and I got to see something that I could possibly want to do in life. And I understand that not everybody would have that sort of type of opportunity, but I think it relates in the sense that like, once you find that thing that really gets you going, I mean, it should trump any sort of drugs that you were taking.
Why do you think you hadn't seen that before, Nick? It's not as if your dad hasn't been, you know, in the thick of film work all his life. And when you were a kid, certainly. I mean, he's, you know, film after film after film. Why did it take this one to open your eyes to that?
I didn't want to. Hold on, sorry about that. He was talking, so it got me distracted.
Ah, Dad again.
What was the question again?
Why do you think you didn't see that potential passion for yourself in film work through watching your own dad's work earlier? This is not his first time at the ball. You know, he's done a lot of films before you were around. Why didn't you see it then?
No, I mean, I loved his movies in the past. I was just passionless. I had nothing that I wanted to do. And only by writing my experience did I realize I even wanted to do film or writing or any of that stuff. I just, you know, I was unaware, and that was a big part of the problem.
Just needed to get that passion. Let's go to Spokane, Washington. Misty. Hi, Misty. You're on the air with Rob Reiner, Nick Reiner.
Hi, Tom. You know, I just wanted to share, I got into a car accident, and I was prescribed pain medication and nothing else for 5 years.
Okay.
And like most people, I got addicted. And
wait, you were on painkillers for 5 years?
Yes.
Wow.
I got into an automobile accident. They didn't do physical therapy or anything. All they did was see me once a month and give me more pain meds.
Okay, great.
At the end of 5 years, I got a letter saying they couldn't treat me anymore because there was too much Vicodin in my system.
Okay.
And I spent the next 4 years lost and afraid because, you know, there is a huge stigma with this.
Yeah.
I'm now in a Suboxone treatment program. And the only way they give you the Suboxone is if you are actively in a program to learn the coping mechanisms that you don't have that lead to your addiction. But I hate to tell people because I am judged for it every single day.
How does that show up, Misty? How does that judgment show up in your life?
It shows up if I go to the urgent care because I have pneumonia. They are nice until they read, oh, you're on Suboxone. Then the whole demeanor changes, the tone of voice.
Mm-hmm.
There's this stigma that is attached to it. Like, why weren't you strong enough to do it on your own?
Yeah.
Which, I'm sorry, is wrong. 85% of the population has predilection to become an addict. All it takes is that one instigating incident. That one time you find that one thing that takes it all away. And so until we cure this stigma, until we make it okay for people to get help and be in these programs and be proud to say, yep, I'm on Suboxone. I'm going to spend the next however many months or years learning the coping skills that I don't have, and that's not my fault.
Yeah.
You have to learn to let go of that.
Absolutely. Nick, jump in here.
I mean, I just really hear what you're saying because I totally know what you mean. I mean, first of all, heroin is completely addictive to the point where when you take it, you get sick when you don't have it. So they give you stuff like Suboxone or Subutex or something like that. And then when you go to these programs or, like you said, in urgent care, they look at you and they're like, oh, but you're not really doing it the pure way. But it's like if you're taking that stuff and you're not living the life that you used to and, you know, you look at yourself and you're truly, you know, to some degree happy, then that should be what matters. Not are you off everything completely, like, you know, and I hear what you're saying and I empathize with that completely.
Rob, what about the stigma part of this? Did you feel that as a family, as Nick went through his struggle?
Well, you know, I personally didn't feel that because, you know, I'm all for, you know, putting yourself out there and talking about these things.
Yep.
And it's like Nick pointed out earlier, the second A is the A that I have a problem with.
Anonymous.
The anonymous part.
Yep.
Because I think the only way that we can help people is to destigmatize this and normalize it. People have problems, and I think there's a good thing that's happening. You played the Ted Cruz little clip earlier, but I think that you have a situation where Republicans and Democrats right now are recognizing that this is not something that should be criminalized. People shouldn't be punished for having a problem. They should be helped. And so the whole idea of, reforming the criminal justice system and not incarcerating people who are just using because they've have problems, that to me is a big step forward. And we have to start recognizing that these people need help. They're not criminals. They're in pain.
It's incredible kind of how much more public this has all been. Jeb Bush, we all heard him earlier in his campaign saying, my daughter Noelle was addicted to drugs. This is Jeb Bush saying this. And of course, Carly Fiorina, my husband Frank and I buried a child to drug addiction. And here was Chris Christie talking, this was New Hampshire last November, talking about an old law school friend who died of opioid addiction.
There but for the grace of God go I. It can happen to anyone. And so we need to start treating people in this country, not jailing them. We need to give them the tools they need to recover because every life is precious. Every life is an individual gift from God.
Rupp Reiner, Nick Reiner, telling a story of families struggling over addiction in their new film, Being Charlie. Jonathan in Miami, you're on with Rob and Nick Reiner.
How are y'all doing?
Well,
I just want to relay a personal story of mine. I get kind of feeling for all these callers. I went through a rehab program myself. I grew up in Dade County, Miami, back in the 80s. It was a cocaine times. We were moving a lot of product, tried everything out there. And it was more part of a lifestyle that I got caught up into.
Yeah.
And anything on the table we would do. It was almost like a mad scientist. But what happened was I got caught up in the justice system. I broke the rules, got caught. They locked me up. And thankfully, I got a good probation officer, Dorothy Belcher, here in Dade County. And she's like, Jonathan, you need structure. You don't need punishment. And she pulled me out of the program and got me into a drug rehabilitation program here in Miami called Here's Help. And there's no 30-day cure. There's no such thing as a 30-day cure. It takes at least a year to get your sea legs. You got to get out of that environment, and you need to have structure. You need to reprogram yourself with the help of others.
So a probation officer ultimately helped you find the path, Jonathan.
Yes, she did. Dorothy Belcher. I'll never be able to thank her enough. But that's not the norm. I saw a lot of people come and I just got lucky with her. Not everyone gets so lucky. Well, it's hard to get out of the system once you get in there. I was 18 years old. I still have the mark. I'll never lose that scar, but at least I'm alive. But I want people to know that there's no 30-day cure. It's a lifetime of fighting.
Jonathan, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Nick Reiner in New York, are you prepared to take up that lifelong challenge? Do you see it that way?
It depends where you are in life. For me personally, I don't see it as a lifelong challenge. I think that only perpetuates the issue. I think it's, you know, and I think when people, they mess up a little bit, or, you know, let's say they'll smoke pot or something like that. It's like, oh, it's all over. Go back to the beginning. Got to start counting those days again. Yep. It's like, what kind of life is that to think, oh, every day, like, you know, white knuckling it, like,
You think you can step past it? You can move beyond it, or have done so?
There's a way, like that man just said on the phone about, you know, he found a way that was unusual and it worked for him, and you know, he found structure and all these things. You know, that was very important to him. But these programs, they want you to do it so specifically to what exactly they want you to do.
Well, I mean, it's hard to personalize when you got so many people in it that we always look for some kind of cookie cutter, I guess. But there are attitudes at work here that maybe can change to make this easier. Ellen in Westfield, Massachusetts. Ellen, you're on the air with Rob and Nick Reiner.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Nick and Rob. Just love listening to the show. I just wanted to call in and say I appreciate everything that you're saying. I just recently married a man who's 30 years in sobriety, and we go sometimes and sit and talk in the rooms, and even though I don't particularly share that drug of choice with them, it's really the first time in my life that I see that a sober mentality, you know, I have issues with weight, I have issues with depression, but the only time I hear people talking real is when you're talking to addicts. It's so funny that all of a sudden a cloud was lifted, and I realized how in my own family, there's a culture of pretending that everything is okay. And you see kids who are struggling with personal pain, and they're reaching out sexually. They're reaching out. Our nation is hugely overweight. We are grossly in debt. There's so many things that we're trying to self-comfort. And if we could just start a movement where we need to get real in your own family, just touch base with your kids. How are you really? How are you? Are you depressed? Are you sad?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're not enough? I mean, we have to touch base and talk about pain and talk about what our kids are really going through instead of getting a bigger house and a better car. Really, there's so much baloney that's going on.
Ellen, you're great. Our time grows short. Rob, Nick, what do you say?
I think she's 100% on point. I mean, that's exactly right. It's all about, you know, I struggle with my weight too. Everybody has some issues that they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And it's all about what is going on underneath. What are you struggling with individually? What are the issues that you're dealing with? And you, that's why you can't have a cookie-cutter approach, because everybody's different. Everybody's dealing with their own issues. Listen, I really applaud that that caller.
But yeah, why? She's a very smart woman.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of smart callers here every day. But what, Rob, you've made these films over so much time now. Why do you think now, in 2016, is it just availability, or do we have some deeper national pain? You said it's about finding happiness, and I agree, but why is that in short supply?
Well, I mean, it's my mother used to say all the time, it's a life is a struggle. Hard to get from one end to the other, totally smooth sailing and happy. People have tough times. People have things they struggle with. And everybody has their own personal issues that come from their family. And so I think if you couple that with very easy access to prescription drugs and cheap heroin and all that, it's a bad combination, really bad.
And like this woman said, yes, it's time to get real. People need to be honest and open.
Your film Being Charlie, I think, is a step in that direction. Have you got a new beat on your dad, having done this work with him, Nick? In the film, the father and son have a pretty tough relationship around drug use and more. I don't know if that's how close to that your story that is, but have you got a new beat on your dad, the great Rob Reiner, having done this work together?
I mean, it's a little bit of a different beat. That relationship is supposed to show what happens between people that love each other during a very hard time, like addiction.
Well, it's a hard time for sure. Being Charlie is all about it, is all over it. It helps open up the conversation. I hope the two of you can hear how people welcome that right here today. I really appreciate your coming on and spending some time with us to shed light on what you've been through, what the film talks about. Nick Reiner, congratulations on the film coming out. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Rob Reiner, great to have you here as well. Thank you very much. Good luck with it. Good luck with it.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Being Charlie opens tomorrow. Listeners, you can continue this conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.